Like to call the subcommittee of employee relations to order today. We'll just kind of let everybody get settled, and then we're going to start with some presentations. I guess we do. Senator Metzen, have you a chance to?
Yeah, I read the minutes. Yes, I'll so move, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Any questions to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes are approved. Can we, getting used to this new world of readers, so I'm trying to figure this out. I can't read anything anymore without them.
Cheaters. Cheaters, Mr. Chair, it's cheaters.
Okay, I can't quite manage it. It's like, I got to figure it out. Oh, those are nice. I got to get some good ones. I'd like to call up the State Residential School Education Association, and can I have the Assistant Commissioner, Ms. Cords, please come forward? Thank you. I guess I was going out of order there. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your presentation, please.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Marcy Cordes, and I am the Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations and State Negotiator. And today we'd like to present for your consideration two negotiated labor agreements which cover the 2013-2015 bargaining round. The first tentative agreement is with the Minnesota Government Engineers Council, which covers approximately 968 engineers who are primarily employed in the Department of Transportation. We also have a tentative agreement with SRSEA, which is the State Residential Schools Education Association, and that contract covers approximately 190 teachers that are employed at the Minnesota Academies for the Deaf and Blind, the Purpich Center for the Arts, and the Departments of Human Services and Corrections. The changes in the financial terms of these contracts are consistent with AFSCME, MAPE, and Middle Management Association settlements that were approved by this committee in September of 2013. The changes include a 3% wage increase effective July 1, 2013, and a 3% general wage increase July 1, 2014. There are progression steps in both years of the contract for those employees that are not at the maximum of their range, and those are contingent on satisfactory work performance. Consistent with the prior settlements, there's an increase to the rates for meal reimbursements to employees that are traveling on state business. These are effective the 1st of 2014. The increases are $2 for breakfast, $2 for lunch, and $1 for dinner. In the higher cost metropolitan area, we've increased those reimbursements by $3 per meal. We've also added to the engineer's contract the addition of a 65-cent per hour pay differential for engineers in the DOT Radio Operations Center, whose shifts begin or end between the hours of 7 p.m. and 6 a.m. This pay is consistent with night differentials that you find in other labor agreements that cover 24/7 operations. With regard to employee insurance, also consistent with the CEGIP changes that were bargained back in June between the state and the union coalition and also approved last year by the subcommittee. The parties also made a few language changes in both contracts, and those are outlined in your summary as well. And that includes my summary, and I'll take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Cords. I'm not sure. I think Representative Drazkowski and I can eat dinner for $20, but I'm not sure Senator Metzen can. I don't know.
No comment.
Any questions for... Well,
you need a motion or?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cordes, could you review the groups of people who are eligible for steps again with us and what the amount or percentage of those step increases are? And then in some of these categories, There are also achievement awards, trying to remember the terminology. Achievement awards, I think, was one of them. Which groups qualify for those? Is it just the group that qualifies for the step that hasn't been stepped out, if you will, or stepped on, or whatever you want to call it? Or is it the entire group of employees?
Thank you.
Ms. Kortz.
Yes. Chairman Lilly and members of the committee, first, with regard to the step movement, steps are available to employees that are not at the maximum of their pay range. They are 3.9% for engineers and 3.4% for teachers. We have approximately 65% of the employees of both bargaining units are at the top step and not eligible for step increases. I believe the achievement awards that you're referring to are in the engineers contract, and those are discretionary awards that are available for meritorious service that can be granted to up to 35% of the employees in the engineers bargaining unit. And those are discretionary. They can be eliminated in any given year if DOT sees fit.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Kortz, are you saying that the achievement award then is applies to those that are in the 35% that are still eligible for steps and in the 65% that has reached the maximum? And if so, and also, what is the amount of that achievement award again?
Ms. Kortz.
Thank you, Chairman Lilly and members of the committee. The achievement award can be granted to up to 35% of any of the employees of the bargaining unit. The adjustment can be an amount up to but not exceeding $1,600.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Kortz, it's kind of, I mean, if for that 65%, it's in essence another way for them to get a step, even though they've stepped out, if you will.
Ms. Kortz.
Chairman Lilly and members of the committee, 35% approximately of the engineers are currently eligible for step movement in the first fiscal year of the contract. And yes, up to 35% of the entire bargaining unit is eligible for an achievement award at the discretion of the department, as well as anybody that could be progressing through the steps.
Okay, so I was in error. We have other components to this to the motion, so we'll hold off, I think, on the motion, and then thank you. Maybe stick around. Might have more questions, but moving to the higher ed component, Ms. O'Connor. Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready, please.
My name is Diane O'Connor. I work as the Deputy Commissioner at the Office of Higher Education.
Thank you.
I'm here to present the Office of Higher Education's compensation plan. This plan calls for a 3% general wage increase effective July 1st on 2013, as well as a 3% general wage increase on July 1st of 2014. We also are proposing up to a 3.5% performance-based salary increase available to employees contingent on meeting performance standards. These increases are not available to those with salaries equal or would exceed their salary range maximum. The plan also calls for a reimbursement for in-state meal rates to increase by $2 for breakfast and lunch and $1 for dinner starting in January 2014, and there is an allowance for mobile devices. The insurance plan remains the same as the plan design in 2013. It remains in effect for 2014 and 15. And in January of 2015, the employer contribution goes down from 100% for single coverage to 95% for single coverage. There are 43 employees in the unclassified plan at the Office of Higher Education. Five of the employees are at their maximum range. 36% of these increases would be covered by general funds. 23% would be covered by loan capital funds. 32% by federal funds and 9% by special revenue funds. All of the changes that I have talked about have been reviewed by MMB and fall within the limits of other compensation plans already approved by this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Seeing none, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. O'Connor. I'm looking at the summary here, and maybe this is for Mr. Hubinger. I don't know, but I've got a sheet that says a 6.68% increase in new spending per biennium, and then one that says 10.68% increase in the next biennium. I'm curious how much of an increase, a percentage increase, is this across the contract?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, these calculations are provided to us by MMB, but indicate the cost for this biennium for this compensation plan of 6.68%. That's the percentage increase in cost that the office will be incurring to pay these increases for this biennium. MMB estimates that the cost of these increases when annualized and paid in the next biennium, the impact on the next biennium will be 10.68%.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Hubinger, from the point in time prior to this contract, we're looking at this contract for this particular area contributing to a 17% increase. Is that accurate?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, there are actually two different calculations. The 6.8% is the estimated impact on the current 14-15 biennium, and the 10.68% is the impact on the next, so they're not additive.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Ms.
Mr. Hubinger, or Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. O'Connor, I'm delighted to see that we've got the word performance in here, and actually looking at performance-based increases similar to how many of us were advocating in the last biennium. This is the first time I've seen this, and certainly you don't have the answers to this, but I'm just generally curious why we aren't seeing this elsewhere, and I just want to thank you for your efforts to see the need to use performance as a standard for increasing those salaries rather than simply just outright providing them for any type of work. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Senator Eaton.
Chair, I'd like to move SER 1.
Thank you, Senator Eaton. Any questions in regards to SER 1? Seeing none, all those in favor? Oh, excuse me, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reviewing SER 1. This is the first two contracts that we talked about. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I've got it right here.
And then also the last part that we just reviewed here with the higher ed component. Okay. So you have the engineers and the school educators and then the higher ed component. So that's my understanding.
I would just like to add, Mr. Chair, if I could, you know, as we look at all of these we have before us today, members, we're looking at a $362 million increase into the next biennium. We're creating future liabilities with these contracts, as we have with the previous ones that we have entertained. And the amounts of these increases, when you're looking at increases, not only in the previous ones that we have looked at, but also with many of these in the neighborhood across 2 years, having a significant portion of these work groups have the ability to receive increases in the neighborhood of 12 or 13%. When you add all of these different things up, the 3% automatic, 3% automatic, 3.5 step, 3.5 step, and then the other things, I struggle to support those types of very overly generous increases for government workers. And we've got farmers in my district that are paying these new taxes that are being used to pay for this. So I think of Apple Tire Service down in the middle of Millville, in the middle of my district, and the farmers coming in with their broken equipment and machinery, having to have a tire fixed and paying the additional sales tax on it in order to fund these types of things. The type of hard work that they also do in order to do this, I just see us experiencing really kind of a different group of Minnesotans here, if you will, the group that works for government and the work group that is forced to pay for it. So with that, I'll be voting in favor, in opposition of the motion. Thank you.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just taking another look at this. You know, the state employees, when we're going through this recession, came to the plate and helped the state balance the budget. I think it was 4 years with no percentage pay raises. And now, this is not even a catch-up, but I just want to thank the state employees for contributing to the problems that we had economically in the nation and at the state level. And you recognized the situation. We told you it's going to probably be zero for a while, and it was zero for 4 years. So I just kind of flipping the coin a little bit that I think these hardworking state employees are hardworking taxpayers also. So anyway, just a thought that they contributed for 4 years at zero, which I think was admirable. So thank you.
No further comments. All those in favor of SER 1 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion passes. And I behaved myself. I didn't give a speech. And a few others, too.
Was I out of line?
No, no. I don't know. Not at all. But I was can agree with you, but
I would have said it if you
but we all okay, so on to the next grouping here. So we have the pension fund representatives. If you'd like to come forward and then please state your name for the record and keep it down to 3 hours, please.
Thank you, Chairman Lilly. For the record, I am Mary Benner, as opposed to Brenner, which is the way the agenda is. I'm Mary Benner. I am the chair of the Minnesota State Retirement System Board of Directors.
I'm Don Rambo, chair of the Public Employees Retirement Association.
Martha Lee Zins, and I chair the Teacher Retirement Association.
Great. Thank you. Can you just state quickly how many people are under each one of your jurisdictions?
Are you asking employees?
You know how many?
Employees and folks who are retired or just employees?
Mr. Pensioners, I guess, or I don't. Okay, whatever.
It's over half a mil, I think, among the three of us. Okay. Between the retirees and the actives, Mr.
Yep.
Chair.
Thank you.
Okay, what I would like to do here, I've I have the honor of being the main presenter for the basic materials that you have in front of you. We want to thank you for allowing us to testify today. We know it's a short session. You have a lot on your plates, and we will try to be as concise as possible. First, in terms of the exhibits, we are counting as our exhibits 1 through 5. 1, 2, and 3 are the materials that you received as part of our respective recommendation letters from MSRS, from PARA, and from TRA. What we have done with these exhibits is consolidated so that we're not bopping back and forth, this technical term, between the materials. We have an Exhibit 4, which is the summary of the two salary surveys that were done on for the pension director related. And they were included in each of the original recommendations, but we just sort of put them in one place so it's easier to respond to and refer to. And then Exhibit 5. Our Exhibit 5 is a compilation of a table that reflects the low, midpoint, and maximum salaries, as well as the current pension director's salaries and proposed salaries for the 133% governor's new law, 133% of the governor's salary, as well as the McLaughlin survey that we had done, and the internal survey salaries that reflect both the nationwide survey and then specific to the Midwestern area survey. And then below that is a table that consolidates from the original recommendations the current and proposed salary increases that MSRS and TRA submitted and the PERA recommendations submitted as well. They're slightly different. And so for ease of reference, we also consolidated those in Exhibit number 5. So with that, I would like to provide a little bit of background on the three statewide pension director salaries. They're defined in 15A.0185 subdivision 2. They're in the Group 1 commissioners range. These are long-term directors, longer significantly than the average state agency commissioners or other agency heads. And they historically were at the top of the range, both at 85% of the governor's salary and at 95% of the governor's salary. Historically, when those laws were changed to 85% and 95% respectively, these folks went from the top of the previous range to the top of the new range. The 133% of the governor's salary law enacted last session moved these directors from the top of the old salary range to almost the bottom of the new salary range. And so that's where we are today. In terms of the new law in Chapter 142, this was enacted last session and permits salary increases retroactive to January 2nd of 2013 for the constitutional officers and the state agency heads. We really appreciate the legislature's work on this legislation and are thankful that there was recognition that the salary structure for state agency heads was in need of updating. The new law allows the governor, without legislative approval, to increase the salaries for the executive branch agency heads, as I stated, up to 133% of the governor's salary, which is equal to a maximum of approximately $160,000 a year. The governor can now grant salary increase to his agency heads without review or approval of the subcommittee or the LCC or the legislature. However, the state retirement systems are not executive branch agencies, nor are the directors subject to governor appointment. Instead, they're career professionals with comparatively very long tenures.
Our directors are appointed by the retirement boards and serve at the discretion of the boards. The new law did not change the process for the pension boards. We continue to be under the current law that directs us and similar boards to continue to seek the legislature's approval for our recommendations, and that's why we're here today. In terms of the methodology we are proposing and how we got to this point, following the enactment of the new Chapter 142, the three board chairs, who are all here today, met to go over the language and what it meant for us. We began collecting relevant information regarding salary levels for comparable positions. Specifically, we sought salary survey information about the state retirement system directors in other states, and in particular, our neighbors in the Midwest, because this is likely the pool that we would recruit from in filling these positions when the current directors retire or move on. And if you take a look at Exhibit 4, which is the compilation of these two surveys, you can see both the McLaughlin study, which was the first one. That survey was based on 16 systems, and the director's current salary, i.e. the Minnesota pension director's current salary, of $114,288 is considerably below the 2013 market median, which was 185.6, and below the 2013 low quartile, which according to this study was 144.6 for executive directors nationwide. Then we did a second study that was internally done by our HR staff. This survey looked more narrowly at 15 systems with organizational structures and scope of duties similar to ours. It also included data from nearby states, as the McLaughlin study did. The results of this survey indicated that the average 2013 executive director's salary for similar plans in other areas was $137.28 for all the systems across the country. And when this was narrowed just to the Midwest, it was $142.115 for the systems. The average number of years' experience that were identified in this survey indicated that they were approximately 7.6 years of service, far lower than what our directors have. Specifically, MSRS's director is 22 years of service, TRA's director has 21, and PARA's director has 17. This is significantly longer tenure than most of the state agency has. In developing a salary recommendation, we also evaluated and documented the performance of our three respective directors, as well as their adherence to affirmative action goals. As we were working on our recommendations, MMB participated in our regular board meetings, as they always do, for all three of the boards. Our directors and staff met with MMB staff on July 23rd, to describe the process we were pursuing in our time frames. In early August, the pension staff provided MMB with answers to an extensive questionnaire that they were doing on behalf of the managers for the state managers and commissioners for analytical purposes, and our three directors were included. On October 28th, retirement staff and I met with MMB staff to firm up our recommendations. When we initially met with the MMB last July, we believed that their current salary study and a Hay evaluation might be done in late November, early December. But now that it looks like it's not going to be completed until late March, April, maybe beyond, we decided to bring forth our recommendations today to this subcommittee during this legislative session out of respect for your legislative process and deadlines. Just to reiterate, the governor has the authority to adjust
You're doing great.
Thank you. To adjust the commissioner's salaries without going before this body, whereas the retirement systems continue to adhere to the legislative process of bringing our recommendations here.
Thank you very much. Good presentation. Any questions?
Oh.
Oh, you're not done?
Well, I can be.
I think you're doing pretty well.
Thank you.
That's probably a good point.
I'm trying to clip long. You have the exhibits and you know where we're going with this. TRA and MSRS are in the same salary proposal, which is consistent with the state manager's plan. Why we selected this is frankly because it's in place. It gave some structure and oversight and predictability to this new paradigm where suddenly we're at the low end of a very long scale. And so that's why we chose what we chose. PRA is in a little bit different place in terms of their proposal, but it winds up coming to the same conclusion. If you want me to close, I will do so, and quickly. Pensions are a very long-term commitment, as you know. Our pension directors have significant financial responsibilities, which demand a high level of expertise in finance and knowledge of actuarial discipline. Each of them oversees billions of dollars in assets, benefits, contributions. Their level of responsibility is significant, and we believe their compensation level should reflect the demands of those jobs. We will be facing succession issues in the near future for each of these, and we note that our laws stipulate that any qualified candidate, even to be considered, must have at least 5 years of experience in major pension systems. And so we're different. These three pension directors are different. They're under different rules. They have different reporting and other responsibilities from the state commissioners and significantly longer tenure. We do appreciate the opportunity that the 133% this long salary will afford us as we are filling behind these folks who will be retiring. But most importantly today, right now, these are long-tenured, seasoned, expert, and respected pension directors, and they deserve a raise, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Well, thank you very much. As a legislator, I just want to thank the three of you for your service. You're citizens, right? I mean, you're serving on these boards, and I'm always impressed with that you take the time and that we have quality people that are willing to do that. It's so important for the state of Minnesota that we have people willing and able to do that, and thank you for that.
Thank you.
Any questions? Representative Drazkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a question about the motion before us. I did notice that the proposal was, I thought, $132,000, which would be a 15% increase, and the motion before us is $126,000, which represents, according to my calculator, 10.5% increase. Is that, are we going with the blue sheet? Is that what I'm seeing?
Representative Drazkowski and others, there's been discussion amongst us, and perhaps it didn't get to, I'm sorry, that we would try to match this with the commissioner's rate of increase. So it just seemed to be more sensible that they were in line with, kind of across the board. And we'll hear more about that from the Commissioner Showalter in a second, of what they're planning to do. So, yes, we're changing some of it. Do you want to go to the higher number?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And given that pensions are a very sensitive issue and that the financial stability is critical, is any of this related to performance, the accuracy of the projections that they make on return on investment, their goal of closing the gap between necessary funding and available funds, any compensation related to performance?
Ms. Brenner?
Yes, we do performance reviews regularly, and as a matter of fact, these pension directors are reviewed every time we meet on closing the gap on the funding stability. We, although certainly the State Board of Investment doesn't report to us, we are continually monitoring the stability and sustainability of these three pensions, and that is reflected as part of the performance reviews that each of us do for each of our directors. Yes, ma'am.
Senator Benson.
But, Mr. Chair, what I asked was, is there anything in their compensation package that would reward them for doing an accurate job.
Oh, fiduciary, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Ms. Brenner, go ahead, you're doing great.
To respond, that's a fiduciary estimate accuracy question, I believe. And each of the boards reviews the fiduciary and actuarial assumptions constantly. And so our goal is to make certain, all of us, I believe, are in the same boat, to make certain that the actuarial assumptions are as accurate as possible based on both the experience for the time that's behind us and the future to the degree that we can accurately predict the future. So, yes, that's a function of each of the boards, and we absolutely do keep our eye on that ball constantly.
Mr. Rambo, I believe you have a comment.
I'd like to speak directly for the Public Employees Retirement Association. And is there a set amount in the salary recommendation for the PRA's director for specific goals that were accomplished? No. There are, but upon the performance review of the director, two significant events have occurred since the since 2008, and the first one was the change in 2010 for the general fund, the coordinated fund, and the efforts that were done and achieved that wrapped in the current retirees, which reduced their rate of increase. They did not lose anything, but the scheduled increase was scaled back. Additional contributions by active and future members, and also the changes for deferred members. So it was a significant, all-encompassing event that took place and was finally sold and adopted by the legislature and signed by the governor. The other happened last year in the 2013 session, where the police and fire fund was addressed, and again, changes were made for the current retirees and for active and future employees. Contributions were increased, and it took a tremendous amount of effort to communicate this to the members. The members actually ended up supporting it and voting in favor of it also. So those are performance issues that directly and had a significant impact, and as the actuaries said, had a significant results in increasing the or decreasing the unfunded liability, closing the gap. So is there a set amount? As I said, no. But this is part of her, our director's overall performance.
Senator Benson, I was a little thrown by who came through the door.
Sorry, I was listening. I heard no. So that was what I was looking for, yes and no. I appreciate the succinct no. Thank you.
Chairman, Lily, if I
may. Yes, Ms. Brenner.
There is no reason, speaking for MSRS, why we cannot incorporate a specific performance indicator to address the accuracy of actuarial assumptions, although that's sort of dictated by the board. But we certainly, I can bring that back to the MSRS board and see if there is something specific that we could add to the performance review. Thank you.
Ms. Zins, did you?
I would echo what they're saying, that the salary is the salary and it isn't broken down by performance. And I'd also say that the board every year establishes goals for what it wants to accomplish and the pension thing. And one of our goals this year is to explore competitive market-driven compensation levels for staff. And we feel that the presentation that Mary made, that we can support what she's done with our research and so forth, and that these sums that we are recommending are consistent with the high-quality job that our executive directors do, and they also fit within the salary of what people in the same job category in other states are doing. And in fact, they're in the low end, and we're we're trying to make sure that our people are appropriately compensated for the excellent job they do.
Thank you. The heads certainly have been responsive whenever I've had questions and come quickly to the office, and I very much appreciate that. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For any of the presenters, we see this with university presidents and others as well. They look around the country and they look across their shoulders and find out what everybody else is doing. And so I appreciate the discussion about at least thinking about maybe moving to something that's based on performance instead of, let's pay our people what they're paying them over there. So this is kind of a continuation of that. But what I oftentimes see as the argument and have seen in this committee and other places to go to these higher levels is, and I haven't heard that argument made, but I'm curious as to whether it is an issue. And the argument is one of, we have to keep up with the McCoys or they'll come and take our people. So my question to you is, have you had any? Have you realized any pressure of any of the employees left for higher salaries in other states, or other locations, or other employers?
Jim Lilly, if I may.
Yep, Ms. Brenner.
The three pension directors, as evidenced by their tenure, are committed individuals to this process, have been for decades. They are good, responsive, wonderful people. And our interest in compensating them is no different from, I believe, what MMB is looking at, and that is comparable salaries. I mean, that's part of the drill here, is to take a look at what other people are making and make sure that there is equity, so to speak. Are these folks threatening to leave us? Only by retirement. They're all long-tenure directors. And I think to reflect on Marty Zinn's comments and also Don's, the issue is about the quality and the performance of these three folks, which, as I said, we monitor constantly and get feedback, very positive feedback. We will be dealing with succession issues, there's no doubt about it, as they did when Howard Vicker retired and they replaced behind him. This is an issue of equity regarding their excellent performance, and that's the most I can say. These are very long term. None of them are threatening to do anything except retire. We're trying to talk them out of that. We'd like to keep them around, but that's. We want to value these folks. They are very good, very responsible directors, and well respected.
Thank you very much,
that's the best
Representative Drazkowski. Mr. Rambo,
I'd like to respond to in Public Employee Retirement Association. The director has, as Mary has said, will be retiring in the near future. Certainly within 12 months, that's the expectation. So is there a threat to move on? Absolutely not. To address the person, the deputy person underneath her, has been offered a job in another state and has rejected that job. And the rejection of that job has come mainly because the family is here. They are raising their family here and have ties into the state of Minnesota. So what will happen when those kids, they become empty nesters? I cannot answer that. There is directors, I know some have left the state and have come back, but the deputy director for PRA right now has made a choice to stay, but he's valued and is looked at and is highly, he is on the national board for implementing the Government Accounting Standard Board pension reporting. So he's out there and is considered very valuable. And Minnesota PRA is certainly lucky to have him. Will they keep him? I do not know. But there are people that have sought his services. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Please stick around and see if there's any further questions or as we go forward.
Thank you very much.
Chairman Lilly, members of the committee, thank you so much.
Commissioner Showalter? Is there any chance that you could bring Mr. Pollard with? We have a few specific questions to fire service in Cottage Grove.
That's a pretty big ask. I don't know. Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Jim Showalter. I'll try to be brief in my remarks. As Mary Benner stated, the facts, we agree, of the issues and the considerations that they're looking at as well as the process that they're trying to look at. Our concerns are not about the individuals who are leading these organizations, our pension funds. They've been great to work with, and these are great organizations. Our concern is really over the proposal as stated, which is to the level of increase that was proposed, the rationale for that increase, and also the change in oversight. So the concern is really around the changes that were legislated last year, authorizing MMB to start a study looking at changing the compensation structure for the state. We believe that the executive directors of these pension funds should be part of that consideration and are concerned that if the legislature acts too far, too fast, we will be sort of quickly setting up an imbalance between the market as well as know-how and difficulty and the range of other state employment options. So that's where we're at. We appreciate where they're coming from, but respectfully disagree with their conclusions at this point in time.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the commissioner? No questions for Cottage Grove Fire Department? No. Representative Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe the commissioner is the right person to ask this question. I don't know. I reflect on two things here. One, we passed legislation apparently last time that would allows these folks who are in upper management in our state government to each of these salaries, the lowest to the highest, are very good salaries from the area of the state that I come from. If you're looking at $114,000, $108,000, $100,000, that's a pile of money where I come from, and that's those numbers alone demonstrate great value, in my opinion, from the context of the people who are paying the bill in my district. I just wonder if we hear, Commissioner, that folks in this situation are here, they're committed, they're good people, they're working hard, and we're going to pay them even more to somehow demonstrate our value for them is what I heard. I don't know that smart financial management with the taxpayer resources. The other question is, given the fact that we've got $17 billion in unfunded liabilities in our pension system, and this isn't a question certainly that is fair for any of the board chairs that were before us, one that they should be asked. But should we as a state be heading in a direction where we're paying people managing these funds when the funds do not have the level of solvency that they should have? Is that a good direction to go?
Commissioner Showalter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, two very broad questions, and I'll try to address them both. And I think the first one is really about human resources policy and workforce policy. And I would simply say that the compensation that the state offers its employees should be balanced between that sense of the notion of market with a notion of the difficulty and know-how that is necessary to get that job done successfully, as well as some sort of equity across the enterprise so that we don't have, that we have sort of some kind of general structure for the roughly 30,000 plus state employees. The difficulty of running a pension plan or running a large agency or being a financial or process expert in some of these agencies are fairly particular skills. And that's where the market does play into account. And certainly when we talked with a group of legislators and talked with people outside, that was part of the discussion last session. And we could certainly refer back to that at another point in time about some of the information that was brought before them. So it's not about the individuals necessarily. It's about setting a compensation structure that seems sustainable both in the short term and the long term so that you can continue to keep and attract people going into the future, and that the state is a reasonable and, in fact, a good place for productive, high-performing individuals in all kinds of leadership positions. Second question you had is about the pension funds, and I think that, again, is a very broad question about the pension stability. That is certainly not driven by the salaries of these funds. It is really a question of pension policy that's gone on over a number of years. You know that quite well. And we have a discretionary decision, and in fact, the legislature is being presented. You are being presented with that question right now, of how closely you tie the pension solvency with the pay decisions right now. But I got to say that many of these decisions and many of the reasons behind the pension problems aren't directly laid at the feet of the executive directors. Now they go back decades and more. The general economy and other things. There's issues we have to address. The question is who you want in the chair to help you address them.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner, for those comments. And I agree with you. I mean, the individual who's managing the fund, it's not their decision that should be a question in light of the insolvency that we do have. But it's ours. And this is our decision that we have in front of us. So we're making that decision. We made the decision for the increased COLAs last time while these funds are bleeding. And this is just another one of those. And the additive effects that we see going on top of those, as I would submit, our poor decisions until we get our house in order. And, Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Chair, I'll be voting against the motion.
Okay. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, I think this kind of piggybacks on what the governor did for agency heads on his own. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a kind of a carry forward and catches some other people up that were not caught up before. That's my judgment on this. And so I would, and we went from the 15 to the 5-5. So I think that was a good compromise. So I'll make the motion. This approval resolution regarding the agency head salaries, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen has moved the SER 2. Any further discussion?
Just a roll call, Mr. Chairman.
Roll call has been requested. Ready, Mr. Hubinger? Mr. Hubinger will call the roll. Chair is aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Winkler?
Aye.
Senator Benson?
No.
Senator Eaton?
Aye.
Senator Metzen?
Aye.
Senator Saxhawk?
Yes.
Motion prevails 5-2. With that, seeing no further business, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Good work.